The following Dafyomi recording begins with today's Daf from the 13th International Cycle. It's followed by a very fast review of the Daf that allows you to listen to the whole Daf within 5 to 10 minutes. That's followed by exactly the same Daf at greater length, deeper explanations, and with a completely different group of people, either from the previous 12th cycle or even the 11th, and sometimes even the 10th. Today's daf in Masechet Sukkah, brought to you by Ben Chomot Yerushalayim, is Daf Vov, and we are holding on Daf Hei Amud Beit at the last question. We're actually in the middle of a sugya, and that would bring us to six lines up, really, from the bottom, where Rav has just finished telling us that Shiurim are Halacha L'Moshem Sinai. He actually said three things. He said Shiurim, Din of Chatzitza, and the dinum of mechitzas. But first, we're going to focus on shiurim. Asks the Gemara, shiurim are halacha l'moshe misinai. Since when? Aren't shiurim dioraita nino dichtiv? We darshan the posik eretz chitao sora gefen uteina v'rimon eretz zeit shemen udvash. Of course, the famous posik, the shiva minim of Eretz Yisrael. But here we want to learn from them that each one of those minim is not only delicious and a shevach of choshev of Eretz Yisrael, it also becomes the makor of a halacha in the Torah, of a shiur, which is also based on Eretz Yisrael, which is another level of shevach. The which Rav Chanin explains that kol pasuk hazeh lishiurim ne'emar. Each one of the species mentioned here are necessary to understand one of the shiurim of the Torah. So let's start from the top. Eretz Chita. Where is Chita a shiur? When it comes to the halacha of a bayit ha-menuga. Now the Torah contradicts itself. Because on the one hand, it says that habay al habayit itma. If a bayit is afflicted with a negat zarat, anybody who walks into the house becomes tamei, which is mashma that it's an instantaneous tuma, something like a tumat ohel. It isn't technically, as we'll see in a moment, tumat ohel, really, but it's called tumat biya. On the other hand, the Torah says, Hashochev babayit itma, Ochel babayit yichabez begadav. So there's a different end of yichabez begadav, Hashochev babayit, it actually says yichabez begadav, Ochel babayit yichabez begadav. That means that it's not enough to just walk into the house. So how do we explain the difference? So what we say is this, anything which itself comes into the house, your own body or something that you've carried into the house, those things become tameh immediately. Therefore, hanichnas lebayit hamenuga. So the person would walk into the bayit hamenuga. However, he is not wearing his clothes. He has his clothes, let's say, draped over his shoulders. He has his shoes he's holding in his hands. His ring he's holding in his hands. So then it is like this. Hanichnas lebayit hamenuga, not wearing his clothes, but carrying them draped over his shoulders, v'kilav aktifav, or sandalav tabaotav, or not on his feet or on his fingers, but they're being held in his hands, then everything becomes tameh immediately, because said abola bayit itma. So over there, huve ain't mein miyad. But remarkably, if he was wearing those same clothes, or if he had those shoes on his feet, or he had those rings on his fingers, then only he would be tameh immediately because he was habay al habayit. But in order for his clothes to be tameh, he has to fit the rulings of the pasuk that says v'hashochev babayit yichabeset begadav or ha'ochel babayit yichabeset begadav. Now, if you don't need to eat, you only need to lie there. I mean, so what is that supposed to mean? You have to be lying down and eating or what? So the Toras Kohanim understands that the meaning is that what we do is darshan that you need to be in the house long enough to have eaten. And therefore, what we say is that he is tameh immediately. However, the things that he's wearing are tahor until such time that he is in the house long enough for a shir of achil of a meal. And what is that? Achi yishebech de achilas pras. We know that's always the shir of achila. And what? Achilat pras. I mean, it doesn't depend on what you're eating. I mean, if you're eating bread which is made out of barley, it's more difficult to chew and swallow than bread made out of wheat. Indeed, the shiur is pat chitin velo pat saurin. So it's wheat bread that we're talking about. And there is the remez of Eretz Chita. Dafka chitim, not pasorin, eating it in a way that you would normally eat, meaning lying and concentrating on your achila and having something that makes it easier to go down, a dip or maybe some butter on the bread. Okay, that's chita. Where is seora, an actual shear? Seora is a shear in the din of two atmagal mas of a mate. So in a bone the size of a barley corn, of a seora, is metame b'mago b'masa, but it is not metame b'ohel. Where is gefen a shear? Gefen is a shear for kedei revi'it yayin linazir. Obviously, that would have nothing to do with the shear per se. What we're looking at is the species. If it's chita, it depends on the physicality of what you're eating. The seora, as again, the actual size of the specific seora. What in the world does a gefen have to do with the gesayah? So Rashi explains that we would be going over here according to the Madi Amar, who says, actually it's a machlokas, whether the Torah puts together the drinking of an ozer of gefen or anything that comes from the gefen, such as grapes or the seeds or the leftovers of the one, whatever the case may be, it's all put together. So it's a machlokas whether that means all of the shiurim are a kezayit or whether all of the shiurim are a revi'it, which is strange because usually, of course, the revi'it is a liquid measure, not a solid measure. And here we're saying that if you eat the actual vine products, such as the grapes or any of the chartzanim or any of the other elements, you have to be meshayer shir revi'it. And therefore, the way in which you would be meshayer revi'it is you take a container of liquid wine and you put material, let's say, the grapes into there. And when the wine has spilled over the shear of a revi'is, that would be a revi'is of, let's say, grapes, right? But the question is, wine as opposed to water will give you a different amount of revi'is. Why? Because the surface tension on the wine is greater than on the water. And because of that, you have more wine that will end up remaining around the top of the container, in which case it makes a difference what the species is. And that's why it says specifically the din of gefen. Fine. Te'ina would be the shear of taking something out on Shabbat, the standard shear, to be motzi b'rishut hayachid l'rishut harabim, or vice versa, or carrying b'rishut hayachid of foodstuffs, is the shear of a dry te'ina, which is a grogeret, a dried fig, that's lohotza at Shabbat. A rimon, where is a pomegranate, a physical pomegranate? Where is it a shear? Ditznam. Kol klei va'alei vatim shi'uran k'rimonim. You know that professionals, they like to use things, or you're in a restaurant, they like to use things that aren't broken. But you know how it is. In your own house, something gets a hole in it, you've been using it for years, you keep it around as long as you can use it for something. So you had something that you once used to serve, you know, liquid in with a salad dressing. Okay, so now you'll use it as a little hole. You'll use it to serve nuts and candies. Gets bigger hole and the candies start falling out. And you use it to serve grapes. Gets a big hole, the grapes fall out. You use it to serve apples and oranges. You know, so at what point does it finally become tohar, and it's no longer shayach to kabbalas tuma, or it's broken? If it were tame, it would become tohar. And here there's a little bit of a question what typically we're referring to. In the Mishnah, it's clearly referring to a kli etz, or a kli etzem. And the truth is that even a kli cheres would have this shear, but only if you specify that I want to keep using the kli cheres. A kli etz is even in a stam, you'd be considered it would still be a kli, until such time as a pomegranate would actually fall out through the hole at that point. You dump it in the garbage. And even if you don't, since most people do, it would be batla daita. So there you've got the shear of a rimon. And what about the next thing? What about the Eretz Zeit Shemen? This Shemen, that's, well, you know, I mean, that's the Kezayit. Everybody knows about Kezayit. All the Shurim are Kezayit. The Eretz Yakosh Yorek Kezayit. What do you mean, all the Shurim? We just mentioned all the whole list over here. Chita, Sora, etc. What do you mean, all the Shurim? Koshi, Yorek, Sakadaitach. I mean, what about everything we just mentioned? Hayika, Ani, Damrina. No, we mean, you know, just about everything is basically a kizayit. I mean, we're talking about chaylev and dam and pigel and isuri achila and notar and yandosha and tome and the shir of tumas meis and the kizayis v'nameis and shir of nevela. So, I mean, it's almost everything you can think of is a kizayit. And what is dvash? Dvash? Ah, that is the shir in the mesech that we just finished. Kikotevet hagasa b'yom ha-kippurim, which is not a din of achila, but it's called a nefesh asher lo t'uneh. So over there we know you require for feeling a certain sense of satisfaction. It's not enough to eat a kizayit. You need to eat a kotevet hagasa, which is a date. So there you've got all of the different species. Baruch ato Adonai Elohim Melech Haolam,
Shekol Nehiyeh Bedvaro. With all these fruits, is there a standard size? And that's where the machlokas comes in.
You mean the machlokas are poskim?
Yeah, which one was
the standard? Yes, yeah, there's no, it's not a standard size. We need to standardize it by measuring. The Gemara says the zayat that we're referring to is a particular species of zayat, the zayat aguri, and so on. But obviously there's a variation. You have to get the median size. You take a large sample. Anyway, says the Gemara, what kind of question is that? For heaven's sakes, I mean, you can't be taking this all that seriously. What does it say in the pasuk about shiur? It just mentions a list of a lot of different things. I mean, obviously, we wouldn't have been able to learn anything out of this pasuk if we didn't have halacha of shabbos should be sidai, referring to the above mentioned shiurim. So shiurim miktiv. It's the same thing about shiurim in this pasuk. For heaven's sakes, it's obviously halacha of shabbos sidai. And we're using this pasuk as a beautiful esmachta to show the remez of the various shiurim in the Perot of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, now the next thing that Rav was quoted as saying was that not only shiurim are aloch l'mashem Sinai, but the din of chatzitzin aloch l'mashem Sinai. Is that true? I thought we learned out that you cannot have a chatzitza when you go to the mikvah from a pasuk. It says in the pasuk, v'rachatz et bisaro b'mayim. So now, how do we understand the word at bisaro b'mayim? Bisaro b'mayim means your flesh has to be in contact with the water. Not that you jump into the water wearing your clothes, but bisaro. So obviously, shelo yeh davar chotzeitz beino levein ha'mayim. There cannot be something between you and between the water. So that's a halacha of Shmi Sinai. That's a dioraita. And says the Gemara, yes. The fact that it has to be in the water is the oraita. However, we still need a halacha of Shmi Sinai to tell me that even your hair has to be in the water. Here it says bisaro. But where does it say that your hair has to be in the water, right? So ki ata yilchata lisaaro. Rabba Barbachana, Yama Rabba Barbachana, Nima achat kishuracha tzetzet. If there's a single hair that has in it a knot, and that's considered to be a chatzitza. Obviously, that's only if you're makar on, as we'll see later on. But if you've got three hairs together that are tied, then they can't tie closely enough to prevent the water from getting in. So that's not a chatzitza. Two hairs tied together, meaning the thickness of two hairs with a knot in them, or four hairs, or so that would be possibly a chatzitza. But I don't know. I don't have a kabbalah about that. Shtayim in yudim. But in any event, the et comes to, the halacha comes to tell me that. Yes, what do you mean the halacha comes to tell me that? That also is learned from the pasuk. Saro namedio raitanina. Dichtiv rachatz et bisaro b'mayim. Et always means the secondary, the ancillary. Bisaro. So what would be et bisaro? The hair that is attached to your skin, right? So that means et hatafel bisaro, which is what? Obviously your hair. So once again, we're stuck without an understanding of why Rav claimed it's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai if we derive it from a beferish pasuk. Now, the Pnei Yeshua points out that the Gemara is a little strange because the Gemara started discussing chatzitzit, right? And then it moves on to the question of whether you need tefillah at all. Why did we call it chatzitzin? If now we're saying that it doesn't say anywhere that your hair has to go into the water, so then say the halacha Moshe Mitzinai was that you require tefillah for your hair. Why focus on the chatzitz element, right? So he explains beautiful pshat. He explains that the halacha is that even though the Torah says you have to get yourself in the water, you don't really have to get yourself in the water. I mean, you don't need to open your mouth for the water to come in, you know. You don't need...
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And actually, we define what the water has to touch by a standardized posture. Now, obviously, depending on how you're standing, water is going to get into parts of your body, and water may not get into every place if you don't move around and, you know, spread your legs and spread your arms and so on. Well, water won't get in everywhere. So that's called beta sitarim. And the truth is, beta sitarim, it's not ma'akev if water doesn't get in. However, there's one thing that beta sitarim is ma'akev. Suppose you've got a temporary filling that's going to be coming out. You say, well, it doesn't matter because it's beta sitarim. I need to open my mouth anyway. Wrong. Even though beta sitarim is not ma'akev the tefillah, it cannot have a chatzitza. In other words, it needs to be theoretically capable of tefillah. Therefore, that's a brilliant question. Therefore, the focus here is on chatzitzin, indeed, of your hair. There may be body hair that wouldn't be necessarily exposed to water, but it cannot have a chatzitza, and therefore, it's chatzitzin.
So this tefillah is
whatever.
Any kind of tefillah.
Yeah.
Filling the tooth is a chatzitza for a woman?
It could be, if it's a temporary filling, yes.
Temporary.
Mm-hmm.
What's temporary mean, though?
Okay. That's a big machlok.
Permanent fillings.
Rabbi said. There's a machlok about exactly what we will accept as a temporary thing. Kata yilkata answers the Gemara. We still need a halacha even with the pasuk that says et bisaro, because you would not know what the specific dinim of a chatzitza are. So let's say you've got a little bit of wax, you know, on a hair. I mean, I don't know. Does it have to cover your whole head? Does it matter whether it's something that you like to put on your hair because you like your hair to be that color? Or, you know, I mean, what's the din? Ah, that is actually expressed by Rav Yitzchak, and Rav Yitzchak's mekor is the halacha l'mosh misinai. So kiata yochata look at the Rabbi Yitzchak, the Omar Rabbi Yitzchak. As far as the Dioraita is concerned, that means halacha l'mosh misinai, because that's the only mekor we have for this. The din would be that rubo umakpidalak, only if it covers most of, now Rashi learns, most of your hair. Now there's a question whether this means as opposed to most of your body, and this halacha is only a din in hair. Tosfos says, no, doesn't mean that. It's most of your hair, but the same thing would be true of most of your body. The Rambam learns that it means most of your hair and body. Not that there's a separate measurement of a chatzitza on your hair and a separate measurement on your body, but most of what needs to be exposed to the water, which is your hair and your body. But in any event, the halacha is like this. If it covers most of you, whatever that means, and you also are makpid on it, then it's a chatzitza. But if you're not makpid on it, even if it covers most of you, she'eno makpid alav, eino chotzeitz. And if it doesn't cover most of you, even if you are makpid on it, it doesn't chotzeitz. The Rabbanan were the ones who were gozer on a rove, even if you're not makpid on it. And they made that gezerah because people would get confused of a case where it's covering rov where you are, makpid on it. And they were also gozer even on a tiny chatzitza where you are makpid on it, because you may end up thinking that hakpada wouldn't be important even if it was rov. So they were gozer in both directions. Asked Gemara, so why not be gozer all the way? You should be gozer even on a miyot that you're not makpid because of the miyot that you are makpid. Or because of the rubo, she'eno makpid. Well, that would be two steps. I mean, higuf a gezerah. If the thing that I'm trying to avoid is itself a gezerah, so should I get up now? V'ala nekom v'nigzor gezerah l'gezerah. I'm going to make a gezerah to cover another gezerah? Okay, fine. Now, the next thing that Rav said was mechitzim r'aloch l'mash misinai. Mechitzim. How are mechitzim r'aloch l'mash misinai? I thought we... Can we just learn it out of the 10 tachim, of the skach, of the kruvim, or the shir of the oroin, and the kaporet, the amoron? So, okay, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we ended up, I mean, that's how we got on this whole sukkah. We said, well, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the sukkah would have to be 11 and a half tachim. So we said, well, ain't hachinami. According to Rabbi Yehuda, but I thought we had a good way of deriving it, according to Rabbi Meir, who said that the Amma of both the Caleb and the Binyan was an Amma, Beinonit, of six Tvachim, right? So why, according to Rabbi Meir, did Rav claim that mechitzas are not a diorita, but they are rather halacha l'meishim sinai, ma'ikel ha'meimar? Well, even according to Rabbi Meir, what about all the strange halachas that are associated with mechitzas, like god achit and god asik and lavud and dofen akuma? How would anybody think that up on his own? So that, indeed, is not learned directly from the pasuk. That is halacha l'meishim sinai. And now the Mishnah continues. So getting back to our Mishnah, the other psul of a sukkah is a sukkah that does not have three walls. Now the Braita expands on that and says, when we say three walls, we don't require three full walls, according to Rabbanan, but rather, Tana Rabbanan, shtayim, two of these walls need to be the shiur kehilchatan, whatever that kehilchatan was. Remember, we had a basically three-way machloket, whether minimal sukkah is four amot, whether minimal sukkah is six tvachim, according to Beit Hillel, or seven tvachim, according to Beit Shammai, Rosh Avrubo, Vashulchano. But whatever the case is, as it happens to be, we pasked like Beit Shammai before, and we said that the shear of a sukkah is seven. But so therefore, when we're talking about three walls, what we mean are two walls of the correct size, and these are two abutting walls, not two facing walls. So they would be in the shape of a gamma or an L. So if you have a two-walled sukkah, the third wall could be just a tefach. And we'll see where that just a tefach would be standing. Rabbi Shimon Omer, no, you need three full walls. You need to have a fourth wall, which is the side of a tefach. So it's revi'it afilu tefach. Now, what would be the basis of that kind of machloket? So b'may pligin. Well, they might argue as follows. Perhaps the Rabbanan hold yesh eim lemasoret, and Rabbi Shimon holds yesh eim lemikra. Now, eim means the fundamental, primary root source of a thing. We know Moshe Rabbeinu gave us a written Torah. That written Torah often reads differently than the way we're supposed to pronounce the words. So that when we may be missing a vav and things like that, or missing a yud. And the Torah is specifically written like that. Now, when it comes to drasha, are we doresh the written Torah, or are we doresh the Torah as it's meant to be read? So the written is a mesorah, that's called basoret. Is the essential way to be doresh the written mesorah, or is the essential way to be doresh from the read Torah? Rabbi Shimon Sofer yesh eim lemikra, the way it's read. And how would that translate here into a machloket about whether we need two full walls or three full walls? Well, as follows. The Rabbanan hold yesh eim lemasoret. Look at how it's written. So you've got basically three references to the word sukkot. And in the posik, basukkot yeshvu shivat yamim, kol hezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu b'sukkot, it doesn't write that, because there's no vav in the b'sukkot. Instead, what it writes is b'sukkat teshvu shivat yamim. And the kol hezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu b'sukkat. Now, that is not the only reference that we have, because the next pasuk says, Laman yedu dorotechem ki basukot with a vav, hoshafti et b'nei Yisrael. So, that means we've got two sukkats and one sukkot. So, two yochit sukkatses and one plural sukkot, which equals four, right? Okay, so you've got basukat, basukot. Add those up, that gives you four. Now, one of those psukim, of course, the first mention of the word besukot, is the mitzvah. I mean, you can't count that as a drosha. So take off one of the besukot, which is written besukat, to tell me gufe, tell me the mitzvah itself, and what are you left with? You're left with a besukat and a besukot, and that gives you three. Those three are a reference to three walls. And now comes along Aloch Lamashim Yisinai, Vata Yilchata Vigara Atal Shlishit, and it tells you the third wall, you can get along even with a tefach. Vuk Me'al Tefach. Now Rabbi Shimon holds, no, you've got to look at the way it's read. So it's read basukot, which gives us six. Taking off one pasuk leaves us four. So Dal Chad Regufe, you're left now with four. Basukot. Therefore, you need four walls. But halacha comes to tell you, you only need a tefach on that fourth wall. So you're left with three kilchatan and atai kilchata. And it says the fourth wall, garat al revit, pulls the fourth wall down, vuk b'ta tefach, and it's left you hanging with just one tefach. That's one possibility. Now, I mean, I could think of multiple possibilities. Maybe that everybody would agree that it all is a function of how you read it. Yesh eim lemikra. What would be the machloket? The machloket is, do you also require a pasuk to tell me that there's got to be sichuch on your sukkah? So mar sava sichocha boikra. One man, the Tanakama holds, well, one of those psukim are needed to tell me the word schach. I mean, would you know that you have to have schach on your sukkah? And the other man, the Omer, says, why do I need it? I mean, the word sukkah means schach. That's why it's called sukkah. So why would I need a pasuk to tell me schach? Schach alo boikra. So therefore, we've got an extra basukot. Or, I can tell you another possibility. Maybe, actually, everybody holds yesh em lamasuret. And the question is not how to read it, it's definitely the way it's written. So we start off with only four. The question is, the halacha of Moshe Sinai, is that coming to add, or is it coming to subtract? So the pasuk is coming to take it down the third wall to a tefach. Umar Sava, Rabbi Shimon says, Allah Al Mashmi Sinai is coming to add a tefach as a fourth wall. And Kiata Yochata is Lahosif. I got another possibility. Maybe they're arguing like this. Definitely the Allah Al Mashmi Sinai is taking one of those walls down. And definitely Yesh Eim Lamasoret. For sure, we only have four because we have to read the pasuk as if it's read without that vav. So it's pasukat, pasukat, pasukot. So then how could you possibly come out with four? Ah, this is a very major difference in how to view the drashot of the Torah. In this particular case, we clearly establish a pattern. Pasukat, pasukat, pasukot. The Torah is trying to tell us something with this repetition, right? So once I understand it's coming to tell me something, I could say, okay, in saying that there's a pattern following the initial occurrence of Basukot Teshuvah, that means that I'm meant to look at the entirety of the pattern. So besides the fact that Basukot Teshuvah Shivat Yamim is a mitzvah, Yeshvu Basukot, Basukot Oshavti, I'm also supposed to add up the number of the Sukkots. And therefore, I can include the first pasuk instead of removing it. Well, I can't ask that because that's the first mention, and the first mention is there for the mitzvah. But that's not a problem because the first mention is ex post facto meant to be retroactively incorporated into the number of walls in the drasha. So that's the question of whether dorshin techilot come here again. So therefore, mar sava dorshin techilot, in which case we've got an extra wall. So we have four walls. Comes along according to Rabbi Shimon, the halacha to be megareya that wall. Umar Savarin Dorshin Techilot Ma'aseh Tanakama says no. One of those psukim is out of the drasha. Now we've got three references, Basukat and Basukot, and the halacha comes to be Megareh, so everybody's made it on that. And so that's another possible explanation. There's many ways that they might be arguing. Rav Matna Amar, look, that has nothing to do with any of this. It's very simple. Rabbi Shimon holds that a sukkah is defined as a protective building. It says, "V'sukat yelit sel yomam mechorev ulemichsa machse ulemistor mizerem umimatar." Now, how in the world could you sit in a building in the middle of a storm that only has three walls and the wind is blowing and the rain is coming? How is it supposed to be a machse? It's not much of a machse. So basically, the pasuk indicates the nature of a sukkah is that it's enclosed. Now, you have a local machine that says, "Okay, but you can get away with only a tefach." But it's a given. So this brings that the Yerushalmi actually darshans the number of words in the machseh, mistor, mizerem, matar, to make four mechitzas. But in any event, what do you mean lechatchila? That's the definition, not lechatchila. That's what it means to be in a
sukkah. Less than that is not a sukkah?
It is not a sukkah, because it's not the machseh, le mistor, mizerem, matar. Except that we have a local Moshe Sinai, that's something else. But as far as the definition of what a sukkah is, it's a four-wall enclosure. Now, when you say that the halacha comes and tells me I can get away with a tefach, where do I get away with a tefach? What exactly does it mean? Does it mean I put a tefach facing the other two walls or, you know, as a diagonal? I mean, it's not at all clear. Where does the tefach go? So, oto tefach, echan ma'amido. Omar Rav ma'amido keneged ayotzeh. Basically, the tefach is meant to be a graphic of the wall that would be there. The third wall, which means that it's attached to the top of the L or the bottom of the L, but it faces where it ought to have been to get a three-walled sukkah with three attached walls. So it's the third attached wall, except that it's tiny, and it's only one tefach, like the pictures that you have on the page here. Omar Rav Kana Rav Asi LaRav, I mean, logically speaking, if we're looking to sort of set up a graphical virtual wall, wouldn't it make more sense to be Ya'amidena Keneged Rosh Tor? Wouldn't it make more sense to have it indicating that it's enclosing the sukkah by not only extending off of one part of the L, but by facing in a straight line, if we would extend it, the other end of the L so that it would close off the sukkah? And that would make it far more powerful. I mean, maybe that's the way we should look at it, sort of like a triangular sukkah, as you see in the Rashi, the diagrams there. Now, a Rosh Tor, there's many explanations of a Rosh Tor. The simple meaning of the word Rosh Tor, say many, is that it's the head of a shor. So that as you're facing a shor coming at you, it has a triangular shape. Others say a Rosh Tor means an earring. And that's Turei Zahav Ma'azalach, Nekudot HaKasef. So that this was a standard type of earring kind of thing, which is not triangular, which is always triangular, you know, sort of a teardrop-shaped earring kind of thing. Others learn Rosh Tor, Tor in the sense of a furrow in a field. So that when you, some say, when you turn around at the end of a furrow, you know, you turn around with the plow. So when you turn around with the plow, it makes that sort of shape, triangular shape, you know, where you're making a 180-degree turn. Maybe that's a Rosh Tor. Others learn when you're plowing in a field where you're coming towards a corner, all of the furrows sort of come together at the corner and it creates that shape. Whatever, but the idea is clear. It's a triangular shape, and why not use that? And Rav did not deign to respond to the question. So Shotik Rav, and in fact, Itbernam and Mishmu, Mishme de Levi, Ma'amido Keneged HaYotzei, nobody pays any attention to the idea of maybe making it triangular. V'chein morim be'midrasha, and look what they say in the Beis HaMedrash, when people come and ask for halacha, that's the hora'ah. The standard of hora'ah is that the third wall is Ma'amido Keneged HaYotzei. It doesn't have to be a Rosh Tor, but it just represents the presence of the third wall that the halacha was Megareya. As the Gemara Shiurim, Dioraita Nino, Dirti Veretskitel Sorav Gevenu Te Navrim on Eretz Zechemenu Dvash, the Omre of Chonin Kola Pasukaze, the Shiurim Nema, the Chita is a reference to the Shir of Abayat Amenuga, the Tan, Anichnas, Labayat Amenuga, the Kilavak Tefav, Sandalavatabo, Tav Biado, instead of wearing them. Then, who vein at me miyad, because everything is independently, Baal Abayat, Baal Abayat Itma. But if I lavushke love and sadalav on raglav and tabotav are worn on etzbotav, then only hutame miyad, but they remain tahor until we can be mekayim the posik of hashochev babayit yechabeset begadav or hauchel babayit yechabeset begadav, and that is a shear of the amount of time it would take you ach yishev teachilat pras. And what achila? Pat chitim, which is easier to eat and swallow. The lo pat saorin, in a standard mode of achila, mesaf and ochal beliftan, and therefore the actual word chita, the species itself, is central to the shir. Seora, there too, it's not. Etzem ki seora is metame b'maga u'b'masa, but it's not metame b'or. Gefen, shir is kedei revi'it, Yayin linazir. Te'ina is the shear of grogeret lotza'at Shabbat. Rimon, it's not called klei ba'alei batim, of kliyetz or kliyetzem, shi'uran kerimonim, and even klicheres, if you were meyachidin for a shear of a rimon. Eretz zeit shemen, eretz shekol shi'urea kezeitim. Koshi orea, sakadaita, we just listed all of the others. Ayikani de'amrina, eleima shirov shi'urea kezeitim. Dvash kikotevet agasa biyom hakipurim. Anyway, why did he say it's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai? Apparently, it's an actual dioraita nidu. Ah, come on, v'tizbra halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai isn't necessary. Do you see anything about a shear in this pasuk? Shear in miktive, Clearly, it's Hilchat Anino, the cross machta bi almahu. Okay, then Rav also was quoted as saying that chatzitzin are local amashmisine. But chatzitzin, you're right, Anino. Dechtiv rachat b'saroba mayim means that his boser has to touch the water. Shelo yedavar chatzitz b'nolo v'no mayim. Yes, but kiata hilchat ala saro. It says b'saro. Kirabba Barbachana, the Omarabba Barbachana, Nima Achat Kishrach Hotzetzet, Shaloshen Hotzetzin Shtaim in Yodea. But Saro is also learned from the Possek, but not a local Meshvisina. The Chtiv Rachatz et Bissaro Bamaim. Et means Hatafel Bissaro. What could that possibly be other than Saro? Yes, but Kiata Yokata, the Kirar Rabbi Yitzvah. The Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Dvar Torah, meaning the Alokhul Mashmi Sinai, Rubo Makpira Lav Chotzetz, She'eno Makpira Lav Eino Chotzetz, V'gazu Al Rubo She'eno Makpid, Mishum Rubo HaMakpid, and Al Muto HaMakpid, Mishum Rubo HaMakpid. So why aren't we gozer all the way? Let's be gozer on miyuto she'eno makpid mishum miyuto that you are makpid, or because of a rov she'eno makpid, both of which would have been also drabonon. Because that's the whole point. They would only be also been a rabbanon. And he go for gizera, vana nekum and exor gizera le gizera. And then you said that according to Rav, mechitzin are aloch lemashmi sinai. But mechitzin we just learned out from the pasuk, from the ikruvim and everything. So ahenich al Rabbi Yehuda, where we had no choice but to access Halach and Moshe Mitzinai, because otherwise the size of the sukkah would have had to have been 11 and a half. But according to Rabbi Meir, I don't need a Halach and Moshe Mitzinai. I learned it out of all on my own. So, Michael Meimer, Kata Yilchata, for the laws of Mechitzot, like good, lovehood, of an akuma, which in la shalosh defanot, Tana Rabbanon, of those shalosh defanot, only shtayim need to be gilchatan, the shlishit afilu tefach. Rabbi Shimon Omer, knowing it shalosh gilchatan, Rabbi it afilu tefach. But my kamiflagin, Rabbanan Savra yesh em lemasoret, Rabbi Shimon Savra yesh em lemikra. So Rabbanan Savra yesh em lemasoret, which would mean I have to read that as if it were written basukat, and only the third reference is written with the vav to read basukot, which gives me only four references to a sukkah. So harekan arbana, one of them obviously is the posuk that tells me the mitzvah. You're left with pashlut tlata. And the halacha comes to tell me that only shtayim of those need to be kilchatan. The third one, the halacha kemu grata l'shlishit v'ukma tefach. Whereas Rabbi Shimon Savar, yesh em lemikra. In which case, we start off with six. We have basukot. Harei kan shesh. One of the psukim has to be removed for the mitzvah. Leaves us with four. So there, too, we have three kilchatan. And the halacha reduced the fourth v'karata l'rvit v'ukmata Hatefa, or maybe we're arguing something else. Maybe Kuleyama Yesh Em Lemikra. Mar Savar, I need one of the remaining psukim, or references to Sukkah. I need it to tell me the din of Schach, Sechacha Boikra, Umar Savar, Sechacha Loboikra, because that's innate in the meaning of the word Sukkah. Viboitema, the Kuleyama Yesh Em Lemasoret. Or maybe it's something else. Maybe Kuleyama Kiata Yilchata Ligareya. And furthermore, Yeshem Lamasoret. The question over here is whether I can retroactively be Dorshin Techilot Kamiflege. Mar Sover Dorshin Techilot, Mar Sover and Dorshin Techilot. Rav Matno Amar has nothing to do with any of the above. It's time that Rabbi Shimon Yocha. Vesukat Yel Tzel Yomam Michorev Lamachsa Ulamistor Mizeram Umimatar. Okay, bottom line is, where do I put that Tefach? Oto Tefach Echan Ma'amido. Omar Rav Ma'amido Kineged Hayotse. Amilor of Kanav Ravasil Rav, wouldn't it be better to be Yamidena Keneged Rosh Tor? And that way it would sort of be Keneged both walls. Rav did not even reply. Shotik Rav. And in fact, Itranami Shmuel said the same thing without even dreaming about a Rosh Tor. He said, "Mishbei the Levi ma'amido keneged hayotze, v'chein morin bein mirasha ma'amido keneged hayotze."
So the name of the space now becomes the space. Okay, we got up to yesterday. Today's daf is not above. Yesterday we got killed. We spoke about Rabbi Yehuda, and we ended up with a problem with Rabbi Yehuda because Rabbi Yehuda had no way of proving, since he held that the Amma of the Kelim is different than the Amma of the Binyan, he had no way of proving that we need a space of 10 Tfachim between the Schach and the floor. The most that he could come up with was a proof that the entire area of the Sukkah would measure 10 up to the top of the Schach, which isn't good enough, as the Mishnah said, that you need to have the Sukkah Schach itself has to be above 10 Tfachim, can't be lower than 10, 10 Tfachim and above. So therefore, the Gemara was forced to say that I'll leave it with you there. It's all halakha mashmi sinai. We don't have any kind of proof from the pasuk. We only know this as a kabbalah. So that's the last thing we said. Elul, let's just review it. The last few words that we read yesterday, so we can do them again. 8 lines up from the bottom. Elul, review the hilchata gemirah. It is indeed halakha mashmi sinai. V'yomer kriya barashi yomer rab shiurin chatzitzino mechitzin halakha mashmi sinai. That the question of shiurim, the Torah said, don't eat something. Shiur of the kezias, or shiur of the kotevet that we had back in the Yuma for Yom Kippurim, and so on. All those shiurim are halakha l'meshmi Sinai. Chatzitzin, which is the halakha of the what is considered to be a chatzitza in tefillah and mikvah, that's considered to be halakha l'meshmi Sinai, which is exactly what it's referring to. And mechitza, so halakha l'meshmi Sinai. Therefore, this din of ten tefachim is a din in mechitza. Mashmud is not a din in tefillah. I mentioned to you yesterday there's some acronym that suggests that maybe there's a difference between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Meir learned it out from din in tefillah. Seifachim b'chanzin. I mean, so that's how we define what seifachim means. If the Gemara now is coming on to say that he's learning it from this halakha l'meshmi Sinai of mechitza, then that's a completely different topic. But I mean, I think that we'll see that that's an artificial distinction as we go through the Masechta, because the relationship between the Sichos and the Mechitzas is so profound in terms of understanding the nature of the Sukkah that this may be a little bit simplistic to say these differences. And these things are lachem eshmi sinai. Ask the Gemara, now wait a minute, shiurim, how could you say that shiurim are lachem eshmi sinai? It's a pasuk, basically, tells us shiurim. Titanya, we know that I'm sorry, dichtiv. Eretz chita u'seora, v'gefenu te'inav rimon, eretz zet shemen u'dvash. Here the Torah defines Eretz Yisrael by utilizing various agricultural products. Rav Chanin said that that posik, the reason for this list of products, is that kol ha-posik hazeh l'shiurim ne'emar. The Torah is coming to tell us the various shiurim of different things. Let's say chita. Okay. In what sense is a chita definitive of a shiur? I'll tell you. L'bayit ha-menuga. What? Chita has something to do with a bayit ha-menuga, with a house that has a nega in it? Yes, it's not. The Mishnah says, anichnas l'bayit ha-menuga. Somebody walks in to a house that has a nega in it. Now that house is metame. He is not wearing his clothes. He's not wearing his shoes. He's not, he doesn't have his ring on his finger. He's carrying them. So he walks in carrying his clothes. Hu v'hein t'mein miyad. Torah says, Habala, by it, anything that comes into the house is tummy. His clothes came into the house, it's tummy, just as he himself is tummy. But, strangely enough, if he's wearing his clothes, lavush kelav, he's wearing his shoes, and the lav v'rag lav, he has a ring on his finger, tabalotav v'etzvotav. Here, really strangely, he indeed becomes tummy miyad because he's considered to be Habala by it. The problem is that the things that he's wearing are not considered to be independently bo'el habayit. And where do we come up with such a crazy idea? Because the Torah says, also, something that makes absolutely no sense. It says, the Habal HaBayit will be tummy. And then it says, V'halchel B'Bayit Yichabeset B'Gadav. What does that supposed to mean? He was tummy the minute he walked in. If he eats in the house, he's going to be tummy, and his B'Gadav will become tummy. So from that, then it also talks about the Shochev B'Bayit. From that, in a complex analysis of the Pasuk, we come up with this understanding. Something which is an independent Habal HaBayit is instantly tummy. Something which is attached to the person, but isn't coming in on its own, obviously the Torah says, requires some other elements in order to become tummy, because that's the only place where it says, Yichabeset B'Gadav, which is wash his clothes. Wash his clothes meaning take it to the mikveh. So we understand that they're not tummy miyad. What is the shear of their tumah? Being in the house long enough to be an ochel babayit. What does ochel babayit mean? So we normally have the shear of a su'udah of kedayach v'ras. Right? Okay, so that's the shear of a guy's eating. Question is, what is he eating? Because Mikdeach was for us, the obviously is going to be defined differently by things that are more difficult to chew and things that are less difficult to chew. Guy is eating a piece of that white Wonder Bread garbage. Takes him about 2 minutes, only 2 minutes, take about 2 seconds to finish a slice of bread. On the other hand, if you're eating one of those seven grain with all of the bran and so on and so forth pieces, take you half an hour to finish a piece of bread, right? If you manage to get it done. So the dinner of Kedakulus Pras is going to be dependent on what? Comes along the Torah to say, what? Bread that's made out of tochita is an easy grain to eat. And therefore, it now will define a certain length of time in which you've begun and become done. That's what tochita is referring to in the pasuk. So therefore, we say, hein tahorim, the things that you're wearing, your clothing, your shoes, are all tahor, ach yishan, until you remain in the house with the nega, v'kdei achilas pras, enough time to eat a shiur of a half of a kika of pap, which is made out of chitin, specifically, as it's made out of wheat, they're not the barley bread or any other type of bread, lo patzorim, mesav, guy who is sitting, leaning in their terms at a table, concentrating on eating his food, Bolcha Beliftan is eating this piece of bread together with what he would normally spread on the bread to make it more palatable and so on. So he has a piece of bread and butter, let's say a piece of bread and peanut butter, whatever. That would be his liftan. In their terms, of course, with a cheese dip, it would be kutak, something like that. And eating that is the shiur. So now I need to know chita. The next word in the pasuk is seora. What is the shiur of a seora? Oh, get it on. The Mishnah says, etzem ki seora. If there is a bone of a dead person, the shiur of a seora, it's metame if you touch it, or if you carry it, even if you don't touch it. V'magal masa. However, that size bone inside of an enclosed space, which is an olam meis, would be defined by a tefach, al tefach, and so on, is not going to be metame in the oil. For that, you would need rove of a skeleton, rove, or you would need the roach, and so on. Those are the various shiurim. But it's not enough to have just an etzem ki seora. So therefore, the word seora is itself a shiur. This is what the shiur is in. How about a gefen? Gefen, kidei revit yayin menazir. A gefen defines a shear. Now the simple meaning of kidei revit yayin menazir sounds like it's saying, but there's a shear of drinking a revit of wine, but that doesn't make any sense. Because the other references that we had in the pasuk was a mode of analyzing the shear, not what the shear is, right? There was a chita told us what type of bread. The seora told us how to measure the amount of bone. You can't tell me yayin. If you drink yayin, I mean, that's the din of the yayin. It has nothing to do with the yayin in the pasuk. That's telling me the shear of the yayin. Therefore, Rashi explains a brilliant, brilliant explanation. It says like this. First thing you have to realize is that the surface tension of wine is very different than water. Now, wine has a higher surface tension than water. Because of that, if you pour a cup of wine, and of course we run up against this in the Havdalah cups all the time, in order to get the wine to run over, you have to pour in significantly more than you would in a cup of water. Because water will only go up the surface tension a tiny bit. Wine will go up higher above before you break the tension and the wine flows over. So now, according to those shitas that hold, that if you're eating, let's say, pieces of the grapevine and so on, all these things like little shoots of the vine, and all these things are also to a nazir too. But the shear of them is the equivalent of the shear of the drinking wine, not the normal kazayit. So therefore, how would you measure a revius of a solid? So you can measure it two ways. You could measure it by putting this amount of solid into a glass of water. But if you do that, then basically you're going to have a completely different amount than you're going to pour in order to get the water out than you would if you were pouring it into a cup of wine. So when it says yayin, it's telling you to use the wine as the material which gives you your reference point to what our revius of solids are. Beautiful. Okay. So that's a today revius, yayin. How are you mashire that revius with wine? Te'ina. What about a te'ina? Where do we have a te'ina in terms of shear? Very simple. Te'ina is a fig, and the shear that we had throughout the Sefer Shabbat, you're carrying something, taking it outside, which is you're going to, from Rosh Hashanah, which is a rabbi, you're carrying it out of Amik, which is a rabbi. The shear of that is a dry te'ina, groger. So the te'ina is a reference also to it. Then it says rimon. Okay, where is there a shear of a pomegranate in the dinim of the Torah? I'll tell you where. It's an Amik. Kol klei balei batin. We know that the halacha is that if a kli, and let's say a kli cheres, it can't be metired in a mikvah, right? Which can be metired by breaking it. What's considered to be breakage? As long as a kli gets a little hole in it, it won't hold water. Is that now considered to be a broken kli? I can still put nuts or something in these serving that doesn't have to be used for liquids necessarily. Okay, suppose there's like a big hole. Okay, so now I can put in maybe apples. You know, they won't fall out. What if there's an even bigger hole? The maximum hole that will tolerate it is the shield remoning. Once it's bigger than that, you're not going to use it for anything. You throw it out. And at that point, it loses its shenkli. Once it loses shenkli, it loses its tumah. But it's only clay balei batim. If you're a professional who's trying to sell a kli, the slightest crack, of course, passes the kli. Who's going to buy a broken kli? So there's a din in kelim that are in a home. Someone has a tamei kli charis. The shear of balei batim is kli monim. And then eretz zeik shemen. Zeik shemen is a type of olive that has a lot of oil in it. That's ogur, but it's called a zayit aguri. That's eretz shekol shioreha kizeitim. All of the shiurim are defined by zeitim. What do we mean, all of the shiurim? We just had a list of things that weren't zeitim. You had a list of rimonim. How could you say all of the shiurim? No, kol shioreha sakadayitak. It can't mean literally all of the shiurim. I mean, there's all these other things. Ela'ema shirov shioreha kizeitim. Most issues of akhila. You have akhila, pigo, noter, pork, whatever, all of these in him are of the kizayim. That is a reference to the zayim of the Eretz Yisrael. With Rosh Hashanah, here's over here, shkoshi yoreha kizeteha, which means that the reference that's used for the zayim is the zayit aguri of Eretz Yisrael, not of other locations. A lot of variations in species, subspecies of zayim. So then the pasuk is coming from the dak, connected to the Indian of the zayit as it grows in Eretz Yisrael. And zayit shem and udvash, what's the vash in the pasuk that defines a shiur? That's Kikoteva Tagasa. There you have on Yom Kippur. You know what the shear is not a kizayim. The shear over there says it says, not, never says in the Torah, don't eat on Yom Kippur. It only says to me that the Tanuat Nafshotechem. Tanuat Nafshotechem is the shear of eating, not eating a kotevet, which is a nice ripe date. Okay? So since that's the case, Alma Dioraita means. You see that all of these things are a Dioraita. And you're telling me that shiurim are all halakha l'mesh b'sinai. How could they be halakha l'mesh b'sinai if they're d'oraita? Says the Gemara, come on. I mean, you can't really believe it. Pasuk doesn't say anything about that. Pasuk is a list of fruit, and I just throw. I mean, I could have said that. If you were just given this pasuk, you're telling me there's a human being on this planet, I could have figured this out. He's talking about, Keith is a reference to Baisamanuka, and Sir is a reference to Etzem, or maybe the other way around. Sir is a reference to Baisamanuka, Keith is a reference to maybe nothing of the above. It's crazy. So obviously, I mean, it's a tizbrak. You're not trying to tell me shiurim miktive. What? Just something in this pasuk about shiurim? I mean, you're out of your mind if you think that. Elohim continue. Obviously, the real meaning of the shiurim has to be a kabbalah. Where's that kabbalah? From which we see that. The pasuk. I mean, the pasuk is obviously only in its master. It's just a way, basically, to remember these things. There'd be no way that you could derive these things from the pasuk. The Rambam in the Pirush HaMishnayos uses this gemara. Uses this Gemara as a proof that the only time that we call something halakha l'mesh b'sinai is if it isn't linked in a real way to a pasuk. You better come over here, I can't stand you. Only if you move over, let me have the next. Only if it's linked in a real way to a pasuk. So he says, you see, the moment that the Gemara. The moment that the Gemara thought that there was a way to actually derive it from the pasuk, how can it call it look? It's only after we showed, look, there's no way that this thing could be a basis for that halakha. It's only for it to be a basis. So then you call it halakha l'mesh. So this is what you will never find, a halakha l'mesh b'sinai that is actually derivable from the pasuk, either mitzad ha'svara or mitzad the midrash ater nidreshes b'hem. Is good? I can imagine what it took to get him here this morning. Okay. All right, so therefore we were correct in saying yesterday, shiurim are actually halakha l'mesh b'sinai, even though the pasuk is a remez for them. Okay, let's take the next case. You said shiurim, chatzitzin. Chatzitzin means somebody goes into a mikveh, but he has something on him that prevents the water from penetrating. He's got a little paint on his arm. Is that paint on his arm is considered to be that he's not in the mikveh? How exactly does it work? So you claimed yesterday that chatzitzin themselves are also halakha l'mesh b'sinai, but actually chatzitzin are also the arayves. Chatzitzin the arayves means 15. Virachat, the actual pasuk is virachat et bisaro b'mayim. But we're gonna darshan the word separately. When it says virachat b'mayim, so okay, virachat b'mayim means shlo yeda varchotzitz v'nolam in amayim. Right? I mean, you're not in the water if you're in. How about if a guy goes into a plastic bag and goes into a mikveh? So, I mean, I don't need a halakha l'mesh b'sinai to tell me You didn't go to the mikveh. So, because it says, Barakat B'mayim. I mean, there was no Barakat B'mayim. So why do I need Halakha Moshe Sinai to tell me the dinim of a chatzitza? And it doesn't make any sense. No, the Halakha... Halakha is coming to tell me that your hair has to be in the water. Hair has to be in the water. Could Rabbi Bar Bachana. The Omer Rabbi Bar Bachana. Nima achat kshuran. If you have a single hair that is tied together, so then that means that the water can't penetrate it. And if you have three hairs, let's say, they're tied together, so then they don't tie tightly. So then the water can actually penetrate. If you have a single hair that's tied together, so then that hair has a chatzitza. Okay? Shalosh einon chatzitza. So the three don't tie together tightly enough. Shtayim einyodea. I don't know. Two, I don't know whether it's tight enough to prevent the entry of water or not. So, for that halacha, that your hair also requires tefillah, I would have thought, okay, your hair is not really your body, it's sort of like, you know, an extension of your body, it's bizarro. I mean, your flesh is certainly not your hair. So, from the pasuk, I wouldn't have known your hair. Comes along, halacha mentioned Sinai, and adds, there's a din of tefillah on your hair. What do you mean? I know that from the Torah also. Saro nami diorayta dino. Your hair is also diorayta. Because when it says, barakat et bizarro, what's the et coming to add? Whenever we have the word et, that preposition, it always comes to include an extension of what it is that we're talking about. Say, kabed et avicha. So et avicha means your older brother. Bad news. The same thing over here. Et tesoro comes to include the b'chor. So when it comes to include over here, the et b'saro is inclusive of the tafel b'saro, that which is basically just an extension of your own flesh. But what is that? My new saro? So obviously, there is no need for halacha, that's the pasuk. Pasuk is telling me your hair's got to be in the water. True. Okay, that's all very nice, your hair's got to be in the water. But would I have known from my own seichel that if a hair has a knot in it, so then that hair has a chatzitza? Look, the hair may be a foot long, you know, if you're talking about Ari, you're talking about, you know, so I mean, you got like one little place in the hair which has a chatzitza. Look, you know, when you walked in, it wasn't the standard 8 minutes. Today's a special day.
So he thinks he's going to get a rod out of me.
It's starting. So long, it's foot long hair. What have you got? You've got like a millimeter that's covered because of the knot, so therefore that's considered to be a chatzitza, that the hair has a chatzitza. Well, I don't know that. So that is indeed halacha moshe Sinai. Now the question is, again, okay, so you're telling me it's a one hair you can't go to the mikveh, or one hair with a chatzitza? Ah, that's like Rabbi Yitzchak Shashita. Ki hatayi yokasa is a Rabbi Yitzchak. Yom Rabbi Yitzchak, Devar Torah, as far as the Torah is concerned, the din of a chatzitza is dependent on rov. That's always, everything goes according to rov. So let's say, somebody pours a bottle of honey over your hair, and most of your hair now is covered with gunk. Most of your hair is covered with gunk. Okay, so then that's rubo. That's going to be chotzes. But suppose you're the kind of guy who likes to walk around with gunk. You see these guys, their hair looks like it's been dipped in honey. They call it gel, you know, whatever they call it. But the fact is that their hair is basically covered in plastic. Nothing to do with their hair. So now the shiloh is, he's not mocking on this gunk. As far as he's concerned, this is an additional beauty to his hair. So then the Torah meteorizes, something you're not mocking on, can be viewed as simply bottled to your vine. So therefore, you'd need two things that would make it a chatzitza. First of all, it covers rov, so it can no longer be bottled to you, since now the main surface area they're trying to be titled. Secondly, it's a robe that you yourself view as not part of your body. But in Lamaisa, to you, this is just, you know, an extension of your body. So, you know, you've got paint on you because you tattooed yourself beautifully for this, you know, belly dancing thing or something. So then that's not considered to be a chatzitza. Now, the Rabbanan came along, so that, I don't know that. That I know from the local Mishnah Sinai. The Rabbanan came along and extended this. Gozru, she'enu makbet al dinei chatzitza. You have a robe, even if it's a robe, and you're not makbet on it, it's not a chatzitza. Rabbanan came along with Gozer, al rubo she'enu makbet, nishum rubo ha makbet. So they were Gozer now, that if you have a robe that covers you, even though you think it's beautiful. Yeah, it's a beautiful paint job. Even so, if we're going to allow you to go to the mikveh, most of the covers with paint, so people aren't going to distinguish between the guy who likes the paint job and the guy who is painting the walls and got covered in paint. Not going to make that happen, you know. Or for that matter, it gets even tighter in a situation. Let's say you're a painter. There's a painter, you don't sit there every single day trying to get off all the paint that's on. You're covered with paint. You're standing, you're covered with paint. You're not marking on paint. Another guy who just happened to decide this week to paint his house, this do-it-yourself project, him is driving crazy that he's covered with paint. But he knows he has to paint again tomorrow, so he's not going to bother taking off the paint. But unless he can't go to the mikveh, but he writes it if it covers lulav. So what are we going to say? One guy can go to the mikveh, the other guy can't go to the mikveh. So we make a gezeira. Basically, once something covers lulav, you can never go to the mikveh with it, whether you're marked on it or not, personally. The other gezeira that we made is gozu al miyuto hamakdis mishum lulav hamakdis. Since the other element in determining whether something is a chatzitza is whether it bothers him. So if we're going to say, somebody comes along and says, oh, I spilled this ink all over my hand. And it's all in. Okay, so it doesn't matter because it's only mute. And so the next time the Maisa, or somebody else who sees that he goes to the mikveh wearing with ink all over his hand, won't realize that he's got paint over the whole top of his body, he covers the roof. He'll say, well, you know, they didn't care. They said, I guess it's not significant because it's so thin. It doesn't really matter. So he'll go to the mikveh with that. So therefore, so in a case where a guy is not, let's say a guy is not mocking, one guy will say, well, I'm not marked, but okay, go. But another guy, maybe even for a miyut, is marked. Now the question is, why don't we put the two together? Why don't we say, okay, so in the case that I just raised, we've got a little bit of ink, and this guy's got, why don't we go all the way? And we say, we should say, says the Gemara, that we should be gozer, but ligzonami, I'm miyut, or shayna marked, which miyut are marked. So then let's go all the way. Let's say, guy has a miyut. And this miyut, the guy is not marked. You're saying, look, if it's both of me and he's not makbid, it's not a chatzitza. Well, wait a minute. Wait, hold on a second. If he would be makbid on it, and it would also be rove, so it would end up being a problem. This guy, like the case I gave, the guy had a little bit of ink on his hand, another guy's paint all over his body. One guy wasn't makbid on the ink, so he said, well, if you're not makbid, you can go to the mikveh. So the other guy who is makbid, or even if he isn't makbid, he may have rubo. So either way, it can end up becoming a problem, no? So let's be gozer all the way and say, anything on your body, makbid or not makbid, rubo or not rubo, it's always going to be a problem. Why don't we do that? Let's say even a little bit of ink on your hand. Say, I don't care about the ink, it doesn't matter. We're going to be gozer bishum yuto makbid. Or let's be gozer inami bishum rubo sheino makbid. Or maybe even if I'm not makbid, but what if I think, gee, they let me go with the ink, so maybe they let me go with the paint all over my body. Well, you can't do that because it isn't all one issue. Each thing is basically a gezer. So now he goofed a gezer. He say, we will not allow you to be teva with a little bit of ink on your fingers. Why? Because it bothers you. And what would be if I wouldn't listen to your gezerah and I would go in anyway to the mikveh? What would be? Midiraisa would be kosher because you need both that it bothers you and that it's rove. So midiraisa would be okay. Right? I mean, so what are you going to say? So therefore, all you would be doing wrong, if it did bother you, would be a drabbanan. So we're going to make now a gezeira because of drabbanan. Don't allow you to have a miyut, even if that miyut isn't makbid, because maybe it would be makbid. And if I would be makbid, I'd still be allowed to go to the mikveh with your eyes. You're telling me, that's, or maybe this time it's a miyut, next time it would be a rove. Yeah, but if it would be a rove, and I'm not makbid, it would still only be a drabbanan. So what you're saying is do two steps. Maybe now you're not makbid. Maybe the next time you will both be makbid and it will be rove. That's a gzeira l'gzeira. And a gzeira l'gzeira we're not going to make. So to say, maybe you'll be over at the rabbanan, that we don't do. It's a klal, of course, all over. The Mazahavamina is that we shouldn't look at those two steps. We should just say that anything that could lead to misunderstanding of the nature of a chatzitza, we should ask. And the Mazahavamina says, look, it's so obviously two completely unrelated elements, makbada and the amount, that there's no reason to view it as all one. All right. So now we've explained why shiurim are actually at halakha l'mashmi we see not a d'oraisa. Chatzitzin, even though the concept of needing to be in a mikveh, fine. But the chatzitza, how much is going to be a chatzitza, that is also halakha l'mashmi we see that. So I couldn't derive this from the Torah. Now the question, by the way, is halakhically speaking, is the hair viewed now as a separate entity? No, let's say that you had most of your hair is covered with gum. Most of your hair is most of your body. So When the Gemara over here says es hatofel l'bishar, does that mean that the hair, we have to view the hair now as part of your body? But obviously, if most of your hair is covered with gunk and nothing else is covered on your body with gunk, then why would that be rov? It's not a rov, it's only rov in the hair. Or let's say your hair, most of your hairs have knots in them. So one knot in hair makes that hair not roy for tefillah. So, but I mean, most of my body doesn't have anything on it. So this is actually a very ancient machlokas between the Gaonim. The Gaonim understood the sugya, and the Rambam brings the sheet. The Gaonim brings the sugya, understood the sugya, as meaning that the hair, once we added the etat of Philip Soro, doesn't mean that they're saying your hair is like your body. It's saying that your hair needs tefillah, just like your body needs tefillah. But in that case, we look at the hair as a separate thing. So if your hair needs tefillah, so then if most of your hair is covered, then you haven't been tefillah your hair. Very interesting halacha. The Rambam, after bringing that halacha, no cosmic clothes, says, but it seems to me, and I have to tell you that it seems to me, that that's not the case. But the only thing that the Gemara is referring to, he says, is that if, including your hair, so you have a robe of your hair and your body, is, but so it's just adding that your hair should also be considered to be part of your body. L'maita in the Shulchan Aruch is makbid even l'kurma, like the Gaonim, which is why we're so makbid with the women that are naked, have to brush their hair so carefully and so on, because it's easy. If you have knotted hair, it's easy to get to a makbid, which robe of the hair indeed is a patita. We are makbid. There's also two other very curious things, by the way, that relate to this. One is the Meiri Shita, which we don't ask it. But the Meiri says, look, if the Gemara is taking for granted, we should look at the hair separately. I mean, obviously, the hair is not any more significant as a separate entity than any other organ of the body is. So therefore, any organ of the body, which is robe, to say most of your arm is covered with veins, that should be robe. Because now your arm wasn't a tzedekah. We won't pass one like that, but you can see where you would get that from. It's sort of combination. Between the Rambam's first man, no, it sounds weird, because it's against the normative halakha, but l'maisa, there are cases where we do that kind of thing. Robe of a neighbor. Got me that in the cool aspect. A hand out, time sheet, that's on earth, it's not. Looks like it. Look, you've got that face a little bit.
I was thinking because of the S.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
It doesn't say, I mean, you're
right. And yet, so you've used it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that you say. So your arms are, that's granted.
That's
take for granted.
Your arm isn't the S.
Right, but once you say to the S, if you learn that the S makes part of your body, so why would we now think that it means something separate? Must mean because of how we treat each part of the body separate. This also leads to another question, which is, this already is debated among the Afronim. If we're talking about the hair as a separate entity, do we mean all of the hair on the body is one entity? Or do we mean each area of hair growth is considered to be a separate entity? It's like really weird. But I think you're going to see it. Again, those are just operations.
And a tattoo that's painted on your body?
No, a tattoo isn't really painted on.
It's painted in.
Anyway, it's painted in. Yeah, but anyway, but it's certainly not makbid alav, and it's not ruba. So it's a miyuche ino makbid, and I would say we're not guys.
And ruba, you obviously have to have
a robe of a paint job tattoo is a major, yeah, it's a major work.
I mean, the issue.
No, but lamaita tattoo doesn't create anything on the surface. It's underneath the skin.
Even if it's ruba. Sometimes somebody comes.
Yeah, even if it's ruba. Yeah, there's no dino chatzit beneath the surface. Okay, so, all right, we've handled the shiurim. We've handled the chatzitin. The last thing that we said was that mechitzi. And mechitzi is considered to be halakha Moshe Mishinai. Says the Gemara, okay, let's take a look at that piece. Mechitzi refers to Adamah. The case of Sukkah that we had just now, 10th of Akkar. Now, do we know that this 10th of Akkar is important? But wait a minute. According to Rabbi Meir, we knew already that in the 10th of Akkar. So the Gemara, Zainif will review that. I understand, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that this is true. Rabbi Meir, who learned out from the din of the Sefer in Bechufayim, so he already knows the din, he derived on his own. And as Rambam has pointed out, wherever we can derive something from a Sephora, or from an analogy, or from one of the leaders in the Tanya Dreshman, we don't call it a law provision. In which case, why do we say, I'll leave it to Rabbi Meir, that mechitzas are also considered to be a law provision, it's derivable. I must point out to you from here, that it's a raya that even though Rabbi Meir derived the halakha from Sichacha, the Gemara takes for granted it's a dinner mechitzas. Otherwise, the Gemara should say, I'll leave it to Rabbi Meir. How do we know the shiur of the mechitzas, let's say, 10 o'clock for Shabbos? We still need to know that. All we know is we need it. A year, all we have is a dinner stock. The Gemara takes for granted. If I know the dinner of Sichacha needs to be 10 o'clock from above, then that means the mechitzas, the dof, the other stock. By definition, it's halakha 10 o'clock. That means it's a bit later, they go. So I was saying earlier that it seems simplistic to try to really define it in different ways, except in certain very, very sophisticated contexts, which later has to do with, as I mentioned, the dinner task of Luminosity, okay, which we'll get to. So anyway, but according to Rabbi Meir, why does it say that Mechitzin, our local Moshe Sinai, we saw, we got them out of our own Svara, from analyzing the Pesukim? Says the Gemara, wait, hold on a second, your own Svara? You would have thought of Dofen Akuma on your own, that the wall comes up and becomes skyscrapers into a wall? Let's see if somebody figure that one out. Or you would know that there's a din of Lod, or you would know that there's a din of good Atik Mechitza, or good Akish Mechitza. You would have known that there's a din of Kitik or Yorid Asasay. Where did you come up with all of that stuff? So obviously all of that is a local Moshe Sinai. There's no way that we could come up with that. So maybe that's what it's referring to. According to Rav Yehuda, it could be referring to the Etzem Shira of Mechitza, plus those things. But according to Rav Meir, it's referring to those things. Plenty of things it could be referring to. It says, the Gemara never kiyata yehokata. What is Allah coming? Good. The two types of goods, good achit, good asik, drag a wall up, drag a wall down, make a wall that doesn't reach the schach, lift it up halakhically until it touches the schach, wall that's hanging, pull it down halakhically until it touches the ground, plus other dinim that are similar to good, the akronim or masvir, such as piti kriyore, the sotain is a type of good, including those type of halakhs. Maybe tzuras hapetach is included in that, and so on and so forth. But those type of things are all what is meant when we say that it's halakhul hashemi sinai. Okay, so far, what have we done? We basically went a little bit off on a tangent because we were trying to figure out where do we get the shear 10 tefachim minimal for a sukkah. Yesterday we said 10 tefachim minimal, I'll leave it already here. Meir, we can derive from the relationship of the kanfei akumim to the base in which they're standing, which was the kaporet, the sukkahim al hakaporet. That's 10 tefachim. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, it isn't 10 tefachim, it's 11 and a half tefachim, because he holds that the size of the ama that was on the oreb was only a 5 tefach ama. So we have a whole different relationship between the Kruv and the Ramit, which we Shabbayit at the 20 Amma, the 20 Tefachim level, and the 8.5 Tefach level of the Oren. And so we were forced to say, I think you there is no Mokka that was derivable, and it must be Halakha Moshe Sinai. How do we know that there's such Halakha Moshe Sinai? Because we have a list of three things that are Halakha Moshe Sinai: Shiurim, Chatzitzim, and Bechitzim. So he must have included Bechitzim. Once we said that, we went off on a tangent to find out what that meant. So shiurim, we went through all of the shiurim. Again, we're going to trick us into going through all of the shiurim by bringing the pasuk and asking, wait a minute, the pasuk says all the shiurim, we went through all the shiurim. Then we explain what it doesn't literally mean, all the shiurim. Obviously, it's only the smach to be on. Fine. Then chatzitzim. Well, we went through all the din of chatzitzim. So we ended up understanding, okay, the halakha is coming to tell me that by tzar, there's a din, ruba, makbid, and then the gezer d'rabbanan. Okay. Chatzitzin, so what indeed if you don't? You said yes, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Chatzitzin is local Mishnah. What about according to Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir points out that obviously a lot of dinim can't be derived from any kind of sword, from any kind of pasuk. So those kind of things, like good atzik and good achis and lovot and dofen akuma, which we had discussed 2 days ago, those things are all what is meant by a local Mishnah. Continues the sukkah. Next piece in the Mishnah is the sukkah needs 3 walls. Tana Rabbanan. Now, the Rice explains, it's not so simple when you say it needs 3 walls. Say it needs 3 walls. My assumption would be, from the information I have handy right now, that depends, obviously, on how big a sukkah has to be. According to Rebbe, how big does a sukkah have to be? Boop, boop. 4 amas by 4 amas. According to Beit Shammai, how big does a sukkah have to be? Right. According to Beit Zohar, how big does a sukkah have to be? Okay. So then that means about 3 walls. Basically, each wall, according to Rebbe, each wall is 4 amas. According to Beit Shammai, each wall is 7 amas, maybe with the Mashal brush. According to Beit Zohar, 6 tefachim, 7 tefachim, whatever. But each one of these machitzas has to follow the rules. We paskin that the shiur, the sukkah, the kosher is the 7 tefachim. Okay, so you need 3 7 tefachim walls. That's what I would think. Come along now, the Rabbon and the Braisa, to tell me that 2 of these walls indeed need to be the correct size. Shtayim kiyokatan. But the third wall does not have to be the whole size. The third wall, this is another one of the tradition of the Mechitzas, that the third wall can be even 1 tefach. As long as it graphically indicates a wall again, and then now you extend it in your mind, so to speak, and Allah can use that as a wall. Allah can use that. So Shlishi Safil Tefach. Rabbi Shimon on that. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says, no. You actually have 4 walls in the Sukkah, and when the Mishnah says this idea of 3 walls, it means 3 full walls. Plus the tefach. That's the point. The fourth wall can be a tefach. I don't really call that a wall, so it's true that a sukkah could have shalosh tefachim. So Rabbi Shimon has shalosh kiyokatan, but revit, a a few of them. Okay, the Maikar Mifrigit. What is the Machlokas based on between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan? They both seem to have certain givens. They know that a sukkah requires a givens. And they both have a din that there's one of the walls can be a tefach. Where did they get the idea that it's a question of whether the third wall or the fourth wall is a tefach? This is a very interesting halacha. You'll find many, many times, this is something that you'll find all over Shas as we keep learning. Many times a pasuk is read one way, but the letters, which is the ksiv, is different. Sukkah is no different, because sometimes Torah writes we call the word basukot teshmu shivat yamim. But somebody doesn't know how to pronounce the word, he notices that there's no vav. He says basukat teshmu. Sukkot is plural, sukkot is singular. So one of those things is the kri, we call that the mikra. One of those things is the ksiv, which we call the mesera, the way that we were given over to write our sefer Torah. Says the Gemara, that is the machlokas, where there's two different implications of how it's pronounced and how it's written, which is the more important one in terms of halacha. More important is the mother, like the mother of all battles of Saddam Hussein. What's the mother, so to speak? What's the mother of halacha? Yesh Eim, the machlokas, Yesh Eim Lemikra. Do we see the way we read it as being the mother of interpretation? Or do we say Yesh Eim Lemisorah, the way that it's written in the pasuk? That's the mother of interpretations. Says the Gemara, that's what the machlokas is. The Maikam Yitzchak, Rabbanan Tzavar Yesh Eim Lemasorah, Rabbi Shimon Tzavar Yesh Eim Lemikra. How does that fit? It fits like this. Rabbanan Tzavar Yesh Eim Lemasorah. How is it written in the Torah? Let's pronounce the words the way that they're written. Basu, what's the example? The way Basukat Yeshu. So let's pronounce that as Basukat Yeshu Shivat Yam. Laman Yedudu Reitechem Ki. Now here we have Basukot or Shafti as Bnei Yisrael. And we have now a third reference, three references to the word Sukkot. So we have, but they say, look, they're all basically Basukat, and then Basukat, and Basukot. Okay, let's add all this together. So what do we have? So we have Basukot. One of the psukim is indeed written Basukot. Ki Basukot or Shafti. That's two. Two other psukim are written Basukat. So that's one and one. All together, that's four. So yet Rieshkan, Sakakot, if you hold that, Arba. Now, one of these psukim cannot be used to teach me numbers because it's coming to tell me the din of sukkah. That there's such a thing as schachan. There's such a thing as being in a booth that has schachan. That doesn't count. I mean, we have to say that, right? So ignore that in terms of the number. So if you take one out, you're left with three. The basukot and the basukat. There's only one basukot. So you're left with three. Okay. So then that three would be three walls. Now, Shtayim Tilchatan, two of those walls are Lahalaka, meaning the Shir, whatever the Shir is, comes along the Halakha, now the Moshe Sinai, but Tayilchatan Girata Lishlishi, and how it says, one of the walls that are required can be only a Tefa. So if the only number of walls that are required are three, so that means we need two full walls and one a Tefa. Okay. Rabbi Shimon on the other hand, no, how is it read? It's read, all of them are read, Sukkot. Basukot Teshvushi Bat Yamin. Kol Ezrach Yisrael Yeshu Basukot. I mean, that's how you're supposed to read it. So I don't care whether it's written with a bubble or without a bubble. All three sukkahs talk about plural sukkahs. That means you've got a total reference of six. Okay, take off one of the six because you needed to tell me the din. That doesn't count, that's a goof, eh? So I put four. For some reason, the Torah repeats. Why is it repeating? To tell you the number of walls. So now I know I need four walls. Comes along, I look, it says one of the required walls is a tefach. Okay, fine. So I have three full walls and one wall is a tefach. Now I can get to that.
You
said
that the
body
is like a remnant,
you know,
tefa,
and the shed from above. No, you don't have to say that. No, it's not a lot. I mean, remnants look pretty good, but this makes a lot of difference. So Rabbi Shimon Tzava Yeshem on Bikra, the effort is Vasukot, 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 Erekan Sheish, Dal Chat, Kral Agufe, one Pasuk doesn't count, you left with four, comes along now, the fourth wall, the Halakha comes, Ata Yilchata, Vigarata, Vereviit, Vukmata Tefach, now we have the fourth wall, is one Tefach. That's one way of understanding the Machlokas. There's another way of understanding the Machlokas. We have a lot of variables here. Because we could also say, everybody agrees, read it, Basukot, that's the aim. Six walls, okay? Now, question is, do we start? Why do we start? See, Yeshem Lemikra, Mar Savar, Schacha Boikra, Umar Savar, Schacha Lo Boikra. So now the question over here, do I need that Pasuk to tell me the sechach, or not? If I don't need the pasuk to tell me sechach, So now, because that's the word sukkah implies both schach and walls. And so why? So should I take off one of these for the schach or not? I take off another one for the schach, of course. Then I have one less. Okay. Yeah. Each one has a sheet in hand. Maybe they're not arguing about how to read it. So we have four. You got to take off one of those four. Tell me the schach. Okay. So now I'm back to where I was in the previous understanding. Or it could be there's another way of understanding. Let's look at the other way. Everybody agrees it's the way it's written. Okay, it's written. Basukat, basukat, basukot. Total of four. So what's the machlokas? Could be the machlokas like this. Mar sarvaketa yukata vigareya. Mar sarvaketa yukata vasi. Maybe the question is, when the halakha said, one machitza of a tefach, how do we understand that? Add one machitza of a tefach? Or subtract one of the given machitzas and turn it into only a tefach? So if you want to add, but given is three. Basukat, basukat, basukot. Fine. So now I have three. All right. Now I'm going to go ahead and take my halakha. So if halakha is saying one of a tefach, and I understand that to mean added to the three, so I have three plus a tefach, which is what Rabbi Yehuda would say. If I understand one is a tefach means one of what you already know, you can rely on a tefach, and I only have two, and the third one is a tefach. Maybe that's a machlokes. There's a lot of ways of understanding my book. Or, then you got another way. Maybe everybody agrees, but the halakha is certainly coming to tell me, don't think you need a full wall, you can get away with one tefach. Everybody agrees, yeshem lemasoret, that we should look at it the way it's written, not the way it's pronounced. Look at it the way it's written, basukat, basukat, basukot. Total of four. What's the machlokas over here? Beautiful machlokas. Where the Torah is clearly giving you a series. And the meaning of this series is for you to get to an analysis of some other element. In this case, the walls. The number of walls being marumas in the fact that there's a series. I'm not learning it out of the psukim. I'm learning it out of the series. So to say in such a case, okay, but the first pasuk doesn't count because I need the pasuk to tell me it's in the psukim. That's not true because there's two completely different issues. There's the information in the pasuk and there's the fact that the pasuk is part of the series. So that's the machlokes. In a series, do we still ignore the first mention? Because of the fact that this information is crucial to the Iker Din, which we call before the Gufe, or in a series, do we say, look at the series as a separate point? Look at the series as a separate point? So a separate point means I can use all four references. Says Rabbi Yehuda, basukot, basukot, basukat, basukat, basukot, equals four. Comes along the halakha of the Gareya. That's three plus a tefach. Says Rabbanah, but wait, even though the series, you can't analyze the first one of the series. Because you need that information. So you only have basukat and basukot, which is three. Comes along now the halakha, say, but one of those three can be a tefach. I love that. So that would be the machlokas. So what's the machlokas? Hacha b'doshin tchilot kamiflege. Machlokas over here is, if you have a series, does the first mention in a series count, even though the information in the kerposk is used for something else? Ma'asav b'doshin tchilot, or ma'asav ein doshin tchilot. Rav Masna Amar, Rav Masna says, okay, you guys are all hung up on this Mesorah and Mikra. I have a whole different approach. Here's my approach. You remember the whole idea of Schach back in the beginning? It says, V'sukat yeletzel yomam nechorev. So you were all very big on that, right? Sukkah should be betzel yomam. So you don't see a sukkah, it's a tzel, and so on and so forth. But you conveniently ignore the rest of the pasuk. Because the rest of the pasuk says, and it should also serve as limachseh, should be a place where you can hide out, in the mistor, mizera v'mimatah. So if you're in the middle of a storm, so this sukkah that is going to be in the days of Mashiach is going to protect you from all the radioactivity and the dust and all the things that are going to be attacking you, and you'll be able to hide out in your sukkah. Now, how can you hide out in a sukkah that's got only three walls and one side can be open? That's not very good protection. I mean, certainly the Atomic Energy Commission is not going to allow that as much of a bombshell, but what kind of sukkah is that? So therefore, the Torah is basically saying the sukkah is an enclosed place. So there, I start with four, not because of any analysis, but I start with four because that's being closed. Comes along the halakha now and says, okay, you can get away with three and one. But I certainly have to start with four. Tosis brings a Yerushalmi that understands this a bit differently. It brings the same pasuk in Yerushalmi, but in Yerushalmi it darshan, but it's a mistake in the gears of the Tosis. But it says, V'sukat yele tzel yomam michorev, tzel, says the Yerushalmi, that's chak. Okay. Then it says, Limichse, ulamistor, that's two. So it refers to two walls. Mizerem umimatar is two. So it refers to four walls. Because, otherwise you're saying this when this side is fine. You know what that means. You don't need sukkah, yell and tell your mom. You could have just said, Bizarre would be my dad. And instead, okay, so there's more protection. It's a total of four laws. Everyone wants darshan. It was the same idea. So we now know that there is a new halacha. By the way, some ask, now you've come up with a new halacha, which everybody seems to relate to. The din of the tefach. How come you didn't mention that before? You were looking for what we need halacha b'Moshe Mitzrayim. You said, we need it for good, we need it for lovud, we need it for dovah. How come nobody said we need it for this din? Of the Mamayat, that extra wall and make it a tefach. That's a brilliant new halacha. There's a lot of approaches to this, which we'll see as we go through the sugya, some of them that we can learn tomorrow. But, do we have time to do a little bit more of this, or do you want to get out? Can we take like 3 more minutes?
Yeah.
Good. Says the Gemara, but where is this tefach? It says the third wall could be tefach, but what do you mean, a tefach? Like a tefach at the corner? Is that what it means? Hey, come on, Nito. Ask the Gemara, you say it's tefach, but where is that tefach place? Because there's many different ways that we understand that the brain fills in information. And so what is it coming to, what best brings out the shape of a sukkah, despite the fact that we're utilizing only one tefach? Now that's Rav. It's not very complicated. Mami do keneged hayotzei. You put it perpendicular to whatever b'chitza it's at. So if it's at the northern wall, you put it perpendicular, which now means it's facing the other four walls. If it was the eastern wall, put it perpendicular, so now it's facing the northern wall. Whatever. But the point is, it's just an extension right at the corner of the wall that would have been here, but I took this wall down and I brought it all the way to the end. Like the pictures in Rashi here, on your Ahmed Bates pictures on Rashi. Very simple. All the way is kind of reversed to the Rav. But, I mean, is that the most effective way to indicate the space? Isn't it more effective to be Yamideno Geneged Rosh Torah? Why don't you make it, basically, a Rosh Torah? Now, what is a Rosh Torah? Rosh Torah can mean three things. Rosh Torah, which Rashi says elsewhere, by the way, here he doesn't say Rosh Torah. Rosh Torah can mean the head of an ox. And Rashi says elsewhere, the head of an ox that you're facing. You better not be, but if you are, right before the end, you know, and it's a sort of triangular shape coming at you, you know. The Rosh Torah would be the Rambam said, in the Rosh HaMashnayot, that Rosh Torah comes to the word Torei Zahav Ma'asalah, which means earrings. So generally, an earring shape comes down, tapers down at the bottom, and goes with the Rosh of an earring. And you go, okay. It's all the same idea. It's got this triangular, you have a tapering thing. The Rashi here says Rosh Torah is from the word for Shura. It's Shura in Aramaic. It's the Shin and the Taf interrelated. So it means if you're plowing your field, what generally happens is you come to the edge of the field because of the way that you move the plow, it seems to be converging. It's also a triangular type shape, which is why you'll notice your picture in the Rashi that's given on the inside part of the Rashi. It draws a triangular shape so that instead of saying what Rob said, that it's just put it as a wall facing the other wall so that it would be parallel to the other wall, what he's asking is, if you make a triangular, it appears to be enclosing the space more than if it's just perpendicular. The problem is, and that's how the Marshal learns Rashi, which is how that shape got in here, because that's the Marshal's explanation. It's drawn according to Marshal. He draws it. The problem is that from Tosis, it's clear that he didn't understand it that way. He doesn't make it a machlokas. And from Rashi also, because Rashi says that the fact that you would do it like a Rosh Torah makes it look more like this form of pizza. It's very strange to see that triangular shape and make it like four. Why do they make it more like four? It makes it more like it's enclosed and not like a four. So therefore, it's clear for Tosis that the inyan of Yamidinu Keneged Rosh Torah is like the picture that you have on the side of your, well, some of you do, some of you don't. Or if you're using the art scroll here. He doesn't bring all of it, he brings some possibilities. One of the possibilities you'll see in the art scroll here is that you should put it on the opposite diagonal. So Rosh Torah is a diagonal. Put the wall up facing the corner. So that way it appears that there's a wall going in both directions. Others understand this sheet as not to be exactly like that, but rather a biyumen at the edge. In other words, you have sort of an angle board going in two directions, just to show the shape of the other edge. That's the Rosh Torah. Let it be a little triangular piece of wood, because it's like a an angle with it, covers both sides. Or the other approach is Rosh Tov, just have it in the middle. Have it in the middle of the empty space, so that it's basically the shape that it's creating is a shape that looks like it's heading towards the middle. But why is that valuable? That would be valuable because it covers more of the area. So then it would be, I mean, why should you push it all the way up against the other edge when it would be more impactful if it would be in the middle, somewhere of that other mechitza? Tosis is bothered, here's where, how we know that this is what Tosis means. Tosis is bothered by the problem is that if you would put it there, why wouldn't, when it comes to Shabbos, if you have a mechitza on Shabbos, you put a board somewhere and there's airspace on one side of the board and airspace on the other side of the board, which is more than the thickness of the board, then it's mevatel on the board because you go going the road. So then why wouldn't we say the same thing over here? So Tosis says, because over here that's what the meaning of the Halakha of Rashi Sinai would be, but it's a filut tefach, right? A filut tefach is that tefach will not be bottom, because that's the wall, view it as the whole wall. So once that's true, I don't have this problem, so I'm going to put it in the most effective way. So they asked this to Rav. Shotik Rav. So Rav didn't respond. It's interesting that there's an akos to show him, what does it mean when it says Rav didn't respond? Does it mean Rav didn't respond? Often we find he didn't deign to respond because he thought it was a stupid question. Or sometimes it means shasik that he agreed. Maybe that's a good point. Now the Balamor brings both of those solutions. But the Ramban, the Mechonis, says to him, I mean, well, all of the Gemara when it has shasik, it always asks us a question. Does that mean that you're shasik because? Or, and here it doesn't do that. So you can't just throw out and say, it means this or it means that. Maybe it doesn't mean either. Maybe we don't know. But there's some Achronim who point out a very interesting thing. The only time that we see that the Gemara asks whether Shosik might mean he didn't deign to respond is where it was this Talmidim. So over there you can say, okay, so he didn't respond. He thought it was a stupid question. But Rav Kahana and Rav Azzi were not Talmidim of Rav. Then they needed Rav. A lot of times they come to Rav, what did Rav hear and what did Rav know? But they weren't Talmidim in terms of Sephora to Rav. Therefore, it's not reasonable to say that Rav, when he was dealing with them, would have been Shosik, which is a stupid question. You don't do that to somebody who's, you know, not your Talmud. So therefore, maybe that's the basis of the two Purushas. Wouldn't be a place in which we would have thought that Rav Shosik would be for that. Okay, so now we have the Gemara basically comes out like Rav. Yitzmar Nami, Omer Shmuel, Mishmei B'Leivim, Mami Vilkin, Eged HaYotzei. Shmuel said the same thing. We put it basically the way Rav said, at the very corner facing the other one. It's parallel to the other Mechitza. V'chein Morim Bei Midrasha. The way we learn it in the Beis HaMedrash, everybody assumes this is the Halacha, Mami Vilkin, Eged HaYotzei. So therefore, whatever the Shosik Rav meant, the Gemara is saying clearly, it doesn't mean he gave in. As he's been saying, at least not in Halacha, because Lamaisa, the way that we view the normative approach is that we're minded it the way exactly the way Rav said it. Not Kinegad Rosh Tov. He's good. Looking true.